Well, hello out there. You're back with Matt and Jamie for Can You Believe That? It's been a while, but as we said, we're going to keep doing these podcasts, and as soon as time is free for both of us, we'll go back to a more regular schedule. But look for them still at least once a month. We'll go ahead and do them for now with a commitment level of where they're at.
Yep.
So, Matt, we've got our usual topics this week of politics, police, and some international events and science. I know we were doing the outline a little bit before, but I forgot to ask, do you have any entertainment stuff you want to bring up later?
Just maybe a little bit about the anime that I've recently gotten into and I'm completely enjoying right now, and maybe a few things about The Flash and Arrow.
Okay, great. Yeah, so we'll tack those on at the end. So, as always, you can go to our site, Can You Believe That, or believethat.net. Excuse me. It's been a while, obviously. Believethat.blackvalor.net. The site is Can You Believe That.
Right. And my cat just tried to kill me. She jumped in my lap as I was shifting, so all her claws extended into my leg.
Oh, yeah.
Through my jeans, thankfully. So. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, it's cool.
I almost screamed in your ear, like a little girl.
So we know that the presidential season has really heated up. There's already been a couple debates for the Republicans, and the Democrats had their powwow.
I think the Democrats have had two, and the Republicans have had four.
Yep. So just go over briefly what we have as far as the 2016 U.S. presidential race cheat sheet. And mm-hmm. I'm getting some information off of the Atlantic. Right now we know that yesterday Bobby Jindal dropped out of the race.
Was he ever really in it?
That's what I was about to ask. What do you think his chances were of actually going forward?
I think there's a better chance of me stepping outside and finding a giant golden nugget sitting in my car. That's for me.
Well, I think it's funny that one quote they have in here is, Jindal moved to seize the mantle of reformer, telling his fellow Republicans that the GOP must stop being the stupid party. And they said, although calling the party you want to nominate you stupid is a risky move, that may have been his point, but obviously I don't think that worked out too well for him.
For somebody named Bobby Jindal to say that his party needs to quit being the stupid party, and then he proceeds to say the insanely stupid things he said, isn't that the definition of irony?
Well, as you said, the Republicans had like four debates so far. Haven't really been impressed with anything there. I thought that the Democrat debates, they at least cover more of the substantive topics that matter to me. So I don't know how you feel about that.
Now, mind you, because I currently do not have cable, and I kind of know what the Republicans are going to say, and with the Democrats right now, I kind of know what they're going to say right now. I haven't really watched the debates. I've gotten the highlights.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the highlights for the Republicans have been who can out-crazy who. Who can say the most racist, stupid, ass-backwards thing they could possibly say. And that's been just about every Republican debate. I think they said the last one was a little bit better, but
yes,
I don't know.
The last one was a bit better, but still just not impressed with the things they're saying. It seems
right.
Like they live in another world than I think most Americans live in.
Well, the sad part is that they do live in another world for most Americans, but while they may, I would say, maybe they're actually a third, them and the people that support them might actually be only a third of the voting capable populace.
Right.
They're 50% of what shows up at the polls. all the time.
And that's the thing. It always comes down to who actually is going out to vote at these elections when they come up. So it's still early days.
Yes, it is.
So far, I haven't seen clear candidate from the Republican side that I would even contemplate voting for. On the Democrat side, I still like Sanders, what he has to say.
Right.
I don't know. I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah. I like I said, I don't know enough about O'Malley to give him a shot. Hillary is Hillary. She's carrying Clinton baggage, and I like what Sanders has to say, but I think a president needs to hold some type of a little more balance than what he's showing right now. And if I'm looking for that balance, I currently see it in Clinton. That's me on the Democratic side.
Right. Mm-hmm.
On the Republican side, I'm amazed these people can get up in tattered shoes.
I don't know. You know, strangely enough, I think that regardless of what the polls are showing now, Rubio probably would be their front runner because he seemed to always be just under the radar and a second choice for plenty of people. Now, I know for a while they had, or even still, that they would say it's Carson. You know, he's either leading or the second choice in many polls, but Rubio's consistently right there without the firestorm that's followed the other candidates, you know, where they go back and forth.
And that's true, but the problem with Rubio is their young guy. He's their quote-unquote Barack Obama, is I think one of the other Republican candidates said to them. But he still has the same old stupid ideas.
Oh, yes.
That the Republicans have been spouting for the last 15 years.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely, but I'm just looking from their perspective.
Yeah, from their perspective,
who they most likely would vote for. And
what's amazing me is the levels of panic that I'm hearing or the perceived panic going on the Republican side when the only place we are right now with this election is two very small states that generally don't decide anything.
Right.
They don't even decide who is the nominee. I mean, how many times did Michelle Bachmann win Iowa or somebody else win Iowa and a month and a half later they're out because they can't win another state? I mean, because Romney and McCain both weren't conservative enough, weren't this enough, weren't that enough, and they both got the last two nominations. Because they were getting blown out in these early states.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to upend our whole schedule because I just saw an article on the Washington Post as I was going through that other article that I got to bring up, and then we can get back to what we were talking about. I'm just going to tell you the title, and then we can go from there. So this is the title on Washington Post. White Americans long for the 1950s when they didn't face so much discrimination.
Ooh, dude, I read that. I actually read that today at work and ended up forgetting about it. Oh, my God. Dude, look, mind you, there are only two black people that work for my company. So I'm surrounded by white folks, and most of them are good. Some of them I know are a little shady, but whatever. It's just like, I sit there and I read that, and I looked up and I looked around.
Yeah.
And I went back and I looked up and I looked around, and I started reading, and I looked up and I was like, I can't believe somebody actually took the time to write this.
Well, right under the title it says, yes, you read that headline correctly. And then it goes into this poll, which was produced by the Public Religion Research Institute on Tuesday.
Oh, okay. See, that I didn't even bother reading that part because I was just skimming through it like, no, they really didn't do this.
Yeah. So it was a poll. So this is what they said. 43% of Americans told researchers that discrimination against whites has become as large a problem as discrimination against blacks and other minority groups.
I'm going to need them. I really need them to go away. I really need them to find reality.
Now, this is all Americans. But here they break it out, okay? So Tea Party, 68% people agree who are Tea Party followers, I guess. So that's not a surprise. Republicans, 64% agree.
Yeah, that's not a surprise either.
And then it switches over for independents, only 45, and for Democrats, only 28. But that is crazy.
Okay, did they give the sample size of this?
That's what I'm looking for now, to see how many people actually completed this survey.
Because if they didn't talk to at least 10,000 people, I need them to really go sit down.
It was 2,695 people randomly selected, 18 and up, who lived in the 50 states and District of Columbia.
No, that's not that's not a large enough sample size.
It's not large.
B, just the name of that group alone says what its bias is.
Yeah. It's funny.
But it's the running joke. Every time you get one of these conservative Republican groups with one of those names like the one you just read, the running joke among people who are a little more progressive, a little more liberal, or people of color is, they want the 1950s again, and they want the 1950s because black people knew their place.
Right. It's not discrimination when you have to give equal treatment to everyone.
Right. Right. They want to be able to treat people however they want to treat them, and nobody able to say anything.
Okay, so I'm sorry. I just had to bring that up.
For that, man, I completely understand. Because I actually read that and forgot completely about it until you brought it back up.
All right, so let me go back to what I was looking at on the Washington Post before I saw that, which was our second article. HUD proposes smoking ban in public housing, citing dangers of secondhand smoke.
Well, I'm going to cite the dangers of their horse hooey right there. I can understand banning smoking of cigarettes in public places. Like, if I'm going out to eat, I don't necessarily want to smell your smoke. You know, that's just me. I think that's just common courtesy among everybody.
Right.
You know, you can't smoke at work. That's fine. But in a place that's supposed to be your home, subsidized or not, it's your business. As long as you're not breaking the law. And to me, it sounds like this is another one of those, you're poor, so we're going to punish you things.
You know, I agree with you that this, to me, is the government overstepping its bounds, because the government has a responsibility to provide housing for people who need it in those instances where, you know, there's no way they can help support themselves.
Right.
Or they need a leg up, you know, whatever. There's there's reasons where these things happen, especially with our economy the way it's been. So that's one thing. But to turn all of these programs always into social control really is what I think it is.
Right.
Where they're trying to address what they feel are the real issues, which are the people's behavioral control.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a bad economy.
Yeah.
And
it's social engineering. And I don't even think, I wouldn't even call our economy bad.
Well, it's gotten a lot better.
I wouldn't say the economy is bad. I would say you have, corporations who are very greedy, who don't want to pay any real money to people, so enough money to people so they can live. So now, as people who were blessed enough to find a job and find work that pays enough to take care of our households, we're getting double banged.
Right.
Because now we're subsidizing these other people's food and shelter, and I don't begrudge that. Of all the things my money, tax money could go for,
right,
I'd rather it go to that than to a new weapon system we don't need. And you know me, I'm pro-military, and you were military.
Yeah.
I just don't think we need, I found out they're researching another stealth bomber.
Yeah.
For what? For what? So it's kind of like we have people out here homeless and hungry who can't find real work, and you'll raise my taxes or my fees and call it broad-based, but you'll like put it on gas, or you'll put it on getting my car inspected, or you'll put it on registering my car, but you won't ask these corporations to kick in another dollar.
Well, and here's what the U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy says. Mm-hmm. There's no safe level of secondhand smoke, so when 58 million Americans, including 15 million children, are exposed to secondhand smoke, we have an obligation to act. And I say, okay, fair enough, but again, because you're providing housing, where does that give you the right to say this? And the way I see it is, you're a parent, you have children in your home. As long as they're in your house, you say you live by my rules.
Right.
And that's what the government's doing here, but it's you know, the government isn't meant to be your parent.
Right. Well, again, okay, there's no safe level of secondhand smoke, and I applaud the General Surgeon for saying that, because actually he is right.
Me
being a non-smoker. But at the same time, you'll allow these companies to sell substandard food to these same people so they can't be healthy on anyway.
Right.
So you're talking out of both sides of your neck. You know, you won't make sure that there's a place where these people can get healthy, life-sustaining food, but people who smoke, I mean, if they're addicted, okay, fine. But some of these people, that's a point of pleasure for them. They're already poor. They're already stressed out. Now you want to take away the little bit of pleasure they have? I mean, it goes back and it reminds me of the stories we used to hear about the projects when we were kids, where they used to come and do regular inspections.
Yeah.
And you better not have a toaster.
Yeah, and I can see on the surface it makes sense, because at the end of the day, you know, it's public housing, so not only is smoking bad for you, but it's bad for the houses that you're smoking in, because, you know,
right.
If you've ever been in a house where people have smoked heavily, that stuff gets into everything and it leaves stains, and
yeah,
you can't get it out, the smell.
I know. So, my whole family smoked.
Yeah.
I'm the one that escaped it.
But, you're saying that, well, because they're in this house, but they don't own their house. The government owns the house, so they want to be good stewards of the property and everything. Like, for example, in the military, I remember when they went to not smoking in federal buildings and mm-hmm. stuff like that, and then, you know, they made the rules more stringent for when you could smoke in uniform, where you could smoke, things like that.
Right.
So the Air Force, I could see from my time there were some serious health benefits that were gained from cutting out the smoking and stuff. You know, it was a joke, the Air Force, you know, you could roll for your PT test because y'all were so big. And they just roll you across the line. And then now, man, I've never seen Air Force more fit. Just that,
right.
Where that's the culture. It's not something where it's a chore to get up and do this stuff. It's just expected and it's evident. But, you know, that's for a security point for the military, because you
right.
need to be healthy to do your mission.
Right. Well, I remember some of the stories you told me about how when we started the war on terror, there were a lot of Air Force guys that were getting jacked up because the fitness requirements weren't as good.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's a complete turnaround from that today. And again, though, there was a national security feature to that, which is why that was put in place. But we're talking about regular civilian citizens of the country, and you're dictating what they can do. What's next? You cannot have alcohol?
Well, yeah, that'll be next. Well, think about it. I mean, they go on this kick where you can't have this because you're poor. Okay, but now you're taking the little bit of relaxation and fun that I can afford to have away from me. So, I mean, I'm trying to understand how this can be justified. This basically is social engineering.
Well,
and I mean, it can be gone on, it can be done on both ends.
The way they justify it is, you want to stay in our house, you got to sign this paper that says you're not going to do this.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's all it's going to be. So they say they're talking about it, but we know what that means. They're putting out the feelers now so people can expect it later on.
Oh, yeah, and you know, it'll be the hilarious thing. People, they'll institute the rule. People will jump up and down and whine and complain about it. But then when you tell them, well, they had like 7 public hearings and you didn't go vote for so-and-so who was against this, they'll go, huh? I don't know. Why should I vote? And you sit there and you go, well, that's why you can't smoke in the place you pay rent anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, not to be morbid, but they say the reason is because it cuts life expectancy and all that stuff. Well, They're looking at the cost, because often people who are going to be in that situation where they need to stay and subsidized housing are probably going to be on some subsidized program for health insurance as well.
Yes.
And they're looking at cutting those costs, which are astronomical right now. But, you know, as usual, instead of fixing the price gouging in healthcare,
yes,
it's easier to say you can't
company.
Smoke so
yes.
you can be healthier.
Right. Like I said, you punish the people on the low end
right.
instead of making the people on the high end act responsibly and act right.
Path of least resistance.
Exactly. Exactly.
So,
and that's the way it's always been.
Oh, yeah. Up next, we have a trio. Yeah, I think it's a trio of articles on our usual segment of cops behaving badly.
Oh, yeah. Them people.
These first two cases, though, are where cops have been, how should we say, punished or... it's been recognized that they did wrong, and they're both facing some kind of sorry, I'm having problems forming my words today.
They're facing punishment.
Yeah, they're facing punishment.
Yeah, which is a nice switch.
Yes. So it is something that we've talked about, as we said before, one of the driving impetuses for us to start this podcast was because of the police brutality and just being fed up, which – in the time that we've done that, these cases have not diminished at all. There's more and more. So part of that is that there's more attention placed on it. And so people are quicker to report these things. And also, it's just a matter of this stuff had been going on all along, but it was very few outlets for people to give voice to it and to get a national attention.
And now more and more it's being caught on video.
Right. So it's those double-edged. So you look at the numbers, and it doesn't really say there's more. It's just that there's better reporting.
Yes.
Of what's already been going on and more public consciousness or awareness of it.
Right. Well, it's like it's always been. Like we've always said, you and I both have known of people who've gotten tuned up by the cops.
Yeah.
Long before there was cell phones to take video.
Oh, yeah.
Long before Rodney King. So it's just like now, it's more people have access to be able to show this bad behavior
right.
by police who are doing the wrong thing.
Right.
And like I said, I understand, and I cannot sit here and say that every police officer is bad.
No, there's thousands of cops.
Right. I've had police officers in my family. You know, I don't know them, but I know of them. But at the same time, if you're a quote unquote good cop, who knows that these other cops are doing the wrong thing? And you condone it or let it fly or let it slide, you're just as guilty as they are.
Yep.
And I mean, and don't get me wrong, because the police are always, you've heard police sit there and say, oh, well, you're either with us or against us. And if you come out against them, they act just as bad as a quote unquote mob or a street gang.
Right.
You get ostracized. You get punished. There are police officers in this country who have been fired for turning other police who were doing the wrong thing in or had their career stunted.
Hey, and I'll tell you, in these three articles I have with police that were either abusive or in one case, shot someone and killed mm-hmm. them. Two were Hispanic and one was black.
Oh yeah. Oh
so
yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. Here's the. When we get that far into it, that was the one. That thing right there is amazing to me.
Yeah. So the
go
first
ahead,
one.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
I'm sorry. Go on.
No. Go ahead. I was telling you to go ahead because I was interrupting you.
Oh, okay. So the first one is an article I got out of Christian Science Monitor. Inkster cop could face 10 years in prison for a brutal beating of black motorists. So this occurred in Inkster, Michigan. The officer on trial was William Melendez. He was fired. He had stopped a person back in January.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, Floyd Dent, who was getting beat, had begged him to stop, and he said he feared for his life. But the cop continued to beat him. The dashboard camera showed that he was punching. The cop was punching Mr. Dent. He had him in a chokehold, and another officer was holding him down.
Yep.
So, clearly, guy was not in a position to even resist if he could, and the cop continued to beat him with the camera recording everything.
Well, if I remember this story right, and I'm pretty sure I do, and I could have it mixed up, somebody can correct me. This cop had formerly been a Detroit or another Detroit area cop who always was getting complaints of brutality and things against him.
Yep.
Now he finally got caught on tape, and they basically are trying to lay the hammer on this guy, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because if I remember the video correctly, he basically dragged this man out of the car.
Yes.
Or the man got out of the car, and he got out of the car, and he wasn't resisting.
No.
And the guy just grabbed him and started pounding on him.
Yeah, and this is the thing. All he did, the guy did, was he rolled through a stop sign.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, they got him, pulled him over. He had a suspended license, but
mm-hmm.
he had no criminal record.
Right.
And they said they found cocaine in the car, but he claims that the cops planted it. He didn't have anything.
And I bet you, if I remember right, they'd already proved that he didn't have
cocaine. Yeah, they dismissed the case against him quickly. And then he actually got $1.4 million in a settlement against
right.
Inkster in a civil mm-hmm. lawsuit. So,
right.
Yeah. So that was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had a cop in L.A., or ex-cop in L.A., at the county sheriff. It was Sergeant Eric Gonzalez.
Okay.
He badly beat a man, Mr. Gabriel Carrillo, or Carrillo,
mm-hmm.
I think you might how you pronounce it.
Right.
Who went to visit someone in the jail and wound up getting beat half to death.
Yeah.
By the cops. For the usual, you know, just felt like he was being disrespectful and all
mm-hmm.
of that. He was handcuffed at the time.
Right.
That's it. And they had cell phones. You're not supposed to have cell phones. So they think they are trying to smuggle cell phones or whatever.
Okay, so that calls for a charge,
yeah,
not a beatdown.
Exactly. A charge. You know, charge him, maybe put him behind bars.
Yeah.
But nothing that warranted getting beat. Because
right.
he was in the police station already. He wasn't
mm-hmm.
being combative.
Right.
And, again, he was handcuffed at the time.
Right.
So,
I mean, at least he got fired.
Yeah.
At least they're charging him. But like I said, until I start seeing convictions, it doesn't mean much to me. And I mean real convictions.
Right.
Because I think recently there were one or two cops. Their conviction got him like 6 months or some dumbness like that.
Well, it was him and two other deputies. They were found guilty of using unreasonable force and falsifying records.
Mm.
And Gonzalez and one of the other officers were also convicted of conspiring to deprive Carrillo of his civil rights.
Right.
So they argue that the cop should have gotten 2 years. Only deserved 2 years in prison. That's what his attorney was saying.
Well, I'm not mad at the attorney. The attorney was actually doing his job.
No, get this, though.
That's
this is what he
to.
Said. He said that the person who was beat owned some responsibility for the beating because of fluttering movements he made with his legs while on the ground and because he turned his head away from the pepper spray.
Oh, the old Rodney King argument. Yeah. Stop moving while you're beating the living hell out of
exactly.
me. Exactly. Yeah, okay.
So who's going to, even when my mom, you know, bent me over a leg to spank me, I was still wiggling around trying to get
exactly.
out of it because I hurt. So
exactly.
They got 8 years.
Well, that's good.
So
no,
it was shorter.
That's good.
It was shorter than the prosecutors requested, but more than what the attorneys thought they deserve.
So the cops split so the judge split the difference.
Basically, yes. Okay, and our next one is on, hold on, let me cover the other cop one that's ongoing or wrapping up before we get to that last one. But this is something recent that happened on Sunday, I believe, or was it Friday?
Okay.
That was Jamar Clark, who was in Minneapolis. He was a 24-year-old black man. He was shot on the ground. And we're not going to cover this in too much detail because there still isn't enough information out there to say whether this was a warranted shooting or not. But eyewitnesses pretty much have all agreed that Clark was on the ground in handcuffs, not resisting, when he was shot.
Yeah, and that's the story I heard. And the police initially swore that he was not handcuffed when he was shot, then changed their story to there were some cuffs around, then they changed to, well, he was absolutely positively unarmed when he was shot.
Right.
But he was interfering with something as part of some assault call or something like that.
Right.
But again, just here in Pittsburgh, well, not in Pittsburgh, in the Pittsburgh area, this 250-pound white guy rolls up on this white female cop who she couldn't have been taller than 5'6" if she weighed a buck. But like this, her vest looked like it weighed more than she did.
Wow.
The guy comes in and reaches for her gun. Not once, not twice, but three times. She holds him off until backup gets there with her taser.
Wow.
This guy is alive today.
Wow.
Now, if I had reached for a cop's gun three times, I probably wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And people can say, oh, no, you don't know that. You don't know what's going through a cop. Look, there are enough unarmed black people showing up shot in the chest while supposedly handcuffed behind their back, shot while unarmed and handcuffed, there's enough of this going around that any interaction with the police is an interaction I do not want. Period.
No. Well,
because I don't want to end up dead because I batted my eyelash in an aggressive way.
Well, and this is the thing that I was talking about with this one officer's hair was black, but the Star Tribune found out that between 2006 and 2012, that city has paid out $14 million for alleged police misconduct, which is a lot. But they said that after that, they set up a review board, obviously, to see what was going on. In the first 439 cases they reviewed, they said that not a single one ended with the officer being disciplined.
Nope.
But in 2014, they had 943 complaints filed against the Minneapolis Police Department.
Yep. Well, put it like this. Here in Pittsburgh, right? Now, I don't have numbers, but we've had a citizen's civilian review board for almost 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's still no cops that get disciplined when they get caught out and called out for doing wrong. It doesn't, I don't want to say it doesn't change anything, because if that review board is run well and funded properly, you can at least bring attention to stuff.
Right.
But it's not helping. You're still not getting the convictions and the discipline of police officers that you should.
Well, it's a matter
of,
my
eyes.
oftentimes, even if they have civilians, they're civilians mm-hmm. who are already
pretty pro-police right, no matter what.
It's a hand-picked audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't go into the communities where people are going to be skeptical regardless.
Right.
Because of their experiences with officers who don't follow the law. And, you know, have them because they figure, well, they can't be impartial. People can be impartial. They want the truth.
Right.
And if they're constantly given a cover-up, they're never going to believe anything that comes out. But if you have someone from that community who's standing up there to say, look, I looked at the evidence myself, and this was justified or
right.
not, it's going to carry a lot more weight. I mean, at the end of the day, people are still going to believe what they're going to believe, but it's a lot more easy to swallow that story that the officials give if one of your own is part of that process.
Exactly. And I have two. Well, you said you had three, and you just did your third. Okay, but here are my two. There was a police officer who was killed up near Chicago, and,
Joseph Glenwicks.
Yeah, him.
Yes.
He said that he was in pursuit of two white, one black, and they fired at him, and guys found him dead. Turns out he killed himself. Now, that made national news that he killed himself. A lot of people know that. Well, apparently, the guy was a thief. He was embezzling money. And just today, it came out because I listened to a station out of Chicago
mm-hmm.
For part of the day at work. And it comes out that they're freezing his wife's assets.
Wow.
Because he stole money. He was stealing money from police youth leagues or something like that. I could have my terminology wrong.
Oh, she had the money still plus all the money they gave him.
Well, she now has access to whatever he had.
Right.
She's his wife. So, you know.
But they also collected thousands of dollars, I thought, from the police fund that they set up.
I think they tried to make her give that back.
That's what I've read last, yeah.
I heard that too. Don't know how true it is, don't know if she's going to have to, but at the same time, you know, that's how bad he messed up. And, of course, they went on this major manhunt, and they were harassing folks when they did it because he said two white, one black. Who do you think they stopped more?
Wow.
But, and then there was this very sad case down south somewhere. Now I can't remember where it was. It's now escaping me, where these two police officers, both of these officers were of color. I don't know if they were black or Hispanic, but they were two brown-skinned sheriff's deputies or officers, and they got into a confrontation with this white male who had his child in the car, and the child gets killed. The boy was 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They fired into his vehicle.
Yeah, okay.
They hit him in the head, and they kill him.
Yeah.
Now, can you... It was within 2-3 days, both of these cops had been fired and charged with murder.
Right. Mm-hmm.
With no, not on film, as far as I know.
No, it wasn't.
Just on the word of, this is a report, this is what happened.
Right.
Meanwhile, you have Cleveland still hasn't charged these cops mm-hmm. and are trying to say that it was reasonable that they shot that boy.
Yeah.
Because he had a quote unquote weapon. You have the cops who also in Ohio who killed the man who was holding a toy BB gun where they just ran in on him
yep.
and started shooting.
Yep.
You have any number of officers who have been, who have had their motives questioned about shootings and beatings and whatever or whatnot where they're never charged, but here are these two black officers or black or Hispanic or some of both, because it ain't like Hispanic people can't be black.
Right.
Who were instantly charged with murder when it was a white child and man on the receiving end of the overzealousness by the police.
Right, and remember, there's been a couple, they haven't gotten a big attention in the news, but there's been a couple young white boys who have been killed by cops in suspicious circumstances. Since last year, too.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it goes more towards cops.
Were the cops charged instantly in those events?
They weren't charged at all.
Were they given? Yeah.
But they should have been. It was a similar circumstance. It just didn't get the attention.
Right. Well, you got to think about it like this. It also goes to that benefit of the doubt for the police.
Right.
Unless the police are brown, too. I mean, at least that's what this incident looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not trying to be funny or start a reverse racism thing here, but let's think about it. You know,
well, again, I just think it goes back more to that the authority that cops have and then those who abuse it goes across color lines. Obviously, it happens more in the community where people are of some other color than white, but it's that power.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more of a power trip because I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but some of my worst dealings with police officers have been the few times I've dealt with black police officers.
Yeah.
They were harsher for the most part. But at the same time, it's kind of like, yeah, you're a cop. Yeah, you're being a jerk towards me because you can.
Right.
Not because I've deserved it or earned it.
Right.
You're just doing it because you can.
Yeah.
You know. And I've always felt that things like that were wrong.
Yep.
But you know.
Definitely.
Oh, and once again to remind our listeners who've been away for a while. If they quit giving us stuff to talk about, we'll shut up about
it. That is true. Now, let's stop talking about cops and annoy people with our second thing that we've spoken about pretty much since the beginning, which is gun control in America.
Yes, good old gun control, or lack thereof.
So in the Christian Science Monitor, they had an article on a report that states that our states with handgun background checks have fewer mass shootings. Isn't that a surprising finding, Matt?
Not by me.
And so, in the interest of time, I'm just going to run down some of the facts they have here. And it shows that 52% fewer mass shootings occurred between January 2009 and July 2015 in the states that require background checks on all handgun purchases.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the FBI's definition of what consists of a mass shooting or what is considered a mass shooting incident, they say that when at least four people were murdered with a gun, they found that there have been 133 mass shootings in a seven-year period. 37 of those incidences occurred in states that require background checks on all handgun sales, but 96 were in states where they don't have background checks. Now, to me, I don't think this is surprising information, but it's nice to have facts because people always want to say, well, you're just saying that. That's your general impression. Well, no, it's backed up by statistical data from the FBI, no less.
Right. And you also have those people who like to say that, well, strict gun laws don't mean anything. Look at Chicago. Well, once again, Chicago's not that far from Indiana, which is very lax gun laws. And when you cross state borders, there's no checkpoint to search your car. You just cross the state border. And you go in and you can sell the guns illegally to whoever you want.
Well, unless you get caught. Remember that woman in Maryland? She crossed into D.C. or whatever and got hemmed up?
But I'm just saying, in general, in the most general of terms, if you go in and you act like you have some sense, you're driving like you got sense, all your stuff is right, and you're driving, and you have illegal guns in your car, the cops ain't gonna stop you. Because they're not patrolling. You don't have to go through border checkpoints to go from state to state. Your chances of making it through are pretty good.
Well, the Christian Science Monitor decided to do their own poll to back up information from the other poll.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the findings, which are, again, are not surprising, but shows how uninformed Americans can be. Okay, so 82% agree that Americans have a right to bear arms. 16% disagree. Fine.
Right.
Here we go. Believe current proposals to ban many types of guns violate the Second Amendment. 51% agree with that. And 45% do not agree that it violates the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
So, gun, semi-automatic rifle,
yeah.
1,000 rounds
of
ammunition with the drum magazine.
Yeah. If your right to bear arms was absolutely absolute, you would be able to own a fully automatic BAR or a fully automatic Thompson submachine gun.
Hey, I'm just saying.
Or a fully automatic AK-47.
If they want to bring back the musket and everyone is authorized to keep a musket to be...
Well, I don't think that's realistic under the current circumstances of technology, but I agree with you.
Hey, I'm just saying, if they want to go all constitutional and match the circumstances that it was written in, then we need muskets and get rid of the semi-automatics. And see how many mass shootings people do with a black powder gun.
Zero, because you'll get beat down after one shot.
It'll do some damage with that first shot if you manage to hit the person. After that,
yeah,
I guess
you manage
they can
to hit anything.
Club.
Yeah, you're gonna get beat down before you can actually reload.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the thing that people also forget, when that was written, the United States had a very small population and a very, very small military. Actually, the United States did not even have a standing army until the 1800s,
which was the whole point.
And I don't even think that was really a standing army. Or if it was, it was very, very small.
Put it this way: our navy was around before the army. So.
Well, was it?
Yeah.
Well, you're the historian. That's why I'm sitting there like, really, was it?
Yeah, I believe
because
even the Marines
were
around before the army.
Yeah. Okay. If you think about it, we were a country that didn't believe in that. I mean, if you look at old World War I footage, our army was so small and so ill-equipped that at the beginning, was it World War I or World War II? At the beginning of World War II.
Well, both.
At the beginning of World War II, the films.
Oh, yeah.
They were driving trucks around with the word tank painted on it, and they were doing firing exercises behind wooden mock-ups of machine guns. They didn't even actually have the equipment to do proper training at the time going into World War II.
It wasn't even until after World War II that they expanded the military and everything, because Americans have always had a distrust of a standing army. And so that was...
At least until then.
Well, yeah, that's what, like you're saying. You know, it was in World War I, World War II, we were always... late to the party because we didn't have those things. You know, we didn't have huge standing armies. We had people in expansion of the West, so, you know, which a lot were black soldiers. People don't like to forget there were black soldiers that protected the West, but that's a sidebar.
Texas wouldn't be there as it is today if it wasn't for the 9th and 10th Cavalry and the 11th and 12th Infantry.
Yep. But we always had to build up to that. And so, yes, back in those days, it was important for people to have their own weapons, because when something happened, you didn't have time to go to the armory and pull out all these guns that had been sitting there for decades in some cases.
There may not have even been an actual quote-unquote armory.
It may not. Well, there wasn't, depending on where it was at. But, I mean, the fact is, not only did people have guns for defense, they actually used them for things like hunting and protection, but not necessarily from people trying to steal their stuff, but people trying to kill them.
Right. Well, let's look at even the Civil War. Now, I know the movie isn't exactly reality, but I could picture this. When Gods and Generals, because I know you saw it, when they did, the South is so romantic and wonderful and this moment, and these men are going off to fight for their country, And when they showed them getting up and leaving, they always showed the Southern men grabbing their rifles and their friends and going off to join the militia. And they would take their own guns.
Yep.
The guns weren't being manufactured. They were taking their own weapons.
Yep.
That they owned.
Even throughout the war, if people had means, they would buy their own guns because they were better than what was issued. And when your life depended on it, you wanted something that was reliable. They came out with repeater weapons, then people wanted to have that. And again, we're not saying that you should not have guns. We're saying that there should be some controls on who gets those guns in today's day and age, at least with cursory checks, things like background checks, because that's not saying you can't have a gun. It's saying we're going to keep guns from people who should not have them. And the incidences of mass attacks that we've been experiencing, you know, we've lost way more people in this country to these lone wolf Americans than we have to terrorists.
Oh, most definitely. There's a stat that I kept hearing today called saying that it was we've lost 1.4 million people in to handguns.
Oh yeah.
In the last several years, maybe 20 or 30 years, then we've lost in all wars since the Revolution. Just since the Revolution. Yeah. All because somebody wants to... I mean, look, I own a handgun. I own two handguns. They're put away. I don't need to carry it. I don't need to put on a show with it. It's here should somebody break in my house, but more likely that... Hey, I always wanted to learn how to shoot. I was always interested in learning the skill. And that's why I bought the thing. It wasn't to say, yeah, I'm big and I'm bad and I can protect myself. And should my gun get stolen, I'm reporting it stolen.
Well, and I even go so far as to say, you know, I'm a collector of things. I like collecting things. So I can see you like guns. You want to collect guns. Okay, fine. But again, there should be some simple check and balance that is authorized. So if you want to buy that gun to add to your collection, what's wrong with going there, getting a background check, and waiting a few days before you can take it home?
If you're a legitimate person, for a legitimate reason, there shouldn't be.
There shouldn't be. It just means you have to be a little patient, but you're still going to get your gun. No one's keeping you from it.
Yeah, nobody's stopping you from spending that $500 and $600
But it does stop
gun.
The crazy... You know, Dylan Roof or whoever from going out, buying a gun, and then 2 days later blasting a bunch of people.
Right. Now, Pennsylvania has instant background checks.
Okay.
So when I went and bought my gun, I walked in, I filled out the paper, they ran it, they said, oh, you're clean, and they handed me my damn gun, and I handed over the money. And I went about my business.
And again, that's not going to stop, you know, mass attacks and everything, but it's just one more step to keep that from happening.
I think, to be honest, you can do a lot of damage with a handgun.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're one of those people who can modify it. The ones that scare me, and you were military, you shot the full scale version of this thing. An AR-15, or as you would know it, the M-16.
Yeah, M4s now.
And M4 now, you know, I shot one at a range once that they had set up to shoot 9mm because it was an indoor range.
Mm-hmm.
To reach out and touch somebody with a rifle, because rifles are that accurate, I'm more afraid of the people that want to go buy that type of rifle than I am of somebody who wants to go buy a handgun, because most likely with a handgun, if I could stay more than 20 feet away, I got a shot at living, because 25 feet is the range they tell you you're going to have most of your encounters at with a handgun. So, but I honestly believe if somebody wants to own a gun, that's their business, it's America's constitutional right, but... Just because it's your constitutional right doesn't mean there isn't some regulation to it.
Exactly.
You have freedom of speech. You can't run into a crowded theater and scream fire,
exactly,
and there's not a fire there. You can't put anything you want on the internet and not expect some type of consequences or repercussions.
And that's what gets me. You would think it would be the opposite. The people who want to protect the rights of Americans to own guns would be for these kind of laws, because what it does is it gives that assurance that you're not all gun crazy just because you have a gun. But when you compare us to other modern civilized nations, we have a serious issue with gun violence. Yeah. I mean, well, violence in general, but especially gun violence. And I did find some numbers here in CNN. They had data that they collected from the Centers of Disease Control, and they found that from 2001 to 2013, there were 406,496 gun violence or deaths due to gun violence in this country. And the number killed by terrorism, not just in America, but around the world, 3,380.
Yeah, we're looking at the wrong thing.
Yeah,
we're complaining and looking at the wrong thing.
But I think we don't need to say any more about that, unless you want to.
The only other thing I could say about it is, you know, let's just honestly sit back and think about this, but because for some reason the NRA has all this power, it's not going to happen. But there was a time when the NRA was against anybody owning any type of weapon they wanted and as much as they wanted, or walking down the street carrying them. I mean, there was a day that me and my wife went to go to a local like chain restaurant, like Eden Park. We're sitting there, we're talking, we're eating, we're laughing, and I watched this old fat white guy who I think you and I could have beat up easily as kids. He walks in with a 9 on his hip. He just walked in, 9 on his hip, like, and I just look like, are you that much of a coward? It's your right, but are you that much of a coward that you can't walk the streets without your penis on your hip?
But he looks cool.
No, he didn't. He didn't look cool at all. And he's substituting for having short man syndrome. And I don't mean his height. And that's the way I look at people who open carry guns that are not police officers or security for an elected official or something. Because if you got to carry open carry like that, you're a punk. Just my feelings on it. We can move on now.
All right. So next, go to the somber topic, which is related to gun violence and just violence in general. But that is the attacks in Paris that occurred last week. And let's not forget Beirut, the day before the Paris attacks, which didn't seem to get
today,
much attention.
And today, Kenya.
Yeah.
Today or yesterday, Kenya got hit again. Yeah. Boko Haram strikes again.
Kenya, or was it Nigeria? I don't know.
No, it was Kenya. I think it was Kenya. I could have them mixed up in my head, but I think it was Kenya. To say that now, on one end, you could say this is the French 9/11, and considering the amount of people killed, okay, I guess.
It was bigger than the Charlie Hebdo attack, but it was
way bigger than the Charlie Hebdo attack.
It was very audacious for those attacks to occur in France, and the way they did, the multiple locations, the multiple fatalities, with the bombing stuff that you would only expect in the Middle East or other places of the world right now, which we have not seen in the West. So I think that is the greater impact, not so much the body count.
I think the coordination of it.
Yes.
Even though if you think about it, it wasn't really that coordinated, but it was coordinated.
Not as coordinated as they usually get, I guess.
It's not as coordinated as it can get. It wasn't like they were pulling off. It wasn't like they were pulling off the dang Normandy invasion.
No.
But it's almost like they they picked the country that they could get to. Like, I feel bad for the people who lost people in that attack. I'm very empathetic to the people that lost people in that attack, and the people who died, and even the families of the terrorists who had nothing to do with it.
Right.
And didn't want anything to do with it and were against it.
I mean, the one main guy, his family thought that he had actually died in Syria. And when they heard Abdelhamid, they said that we hope he is dead.
Yeah.
They were really hoping that he was dead. And then to find out that he didn't die, they were more disappointed in that because of the dishonor he brought to their family.
Right. I mean, how did I see it listed? Everybody's saying that the religion of Islam is this violent, terrible thing because of most of the terrorists that you see around the world are Islamic, but there's 1.6 billion Muslim people on planet Earth, or something like that.
There's a lot.
There's a whole lot. But somebody broke it down, and they more than likely were pulling the number from their posterior, but they were like 0.0003% of those people are terrorists.
Well, I actually had some numbers as far as how many they expect in Europe, because like France has the most Muslims or concentration of Muslims outside of the Middle East.
Okay.
But they also have the largest concentration of Jewish people, which my wife, we were talking about this before, and she shared that with me, so I don't want to take all the credit for that. But
Right. Yeah, no, you can't do that.
No. But also in looking at the information that's come out afterwards, where Abdulhamid grew up, that area is very heavily influenced by radical Islamists. And many of those attacks that have occurred, the people who committed those acts have ties to the very neighborhoods where he came from. And so they feel that is a cell. But they were saying that the large numbers of people that they think are fighting in Syria, you know, the idea that's been put about in the news, people from Europe and America, mainly Europe, are going to Syria, getting training with ISIS, and coming back to be the sleeper cells and attack. So they estimate, though, that only maybe 2,000 and 3,000 of these people who are coming back are fighters.
Right.
And this is out of, as you said, the millions of Muslims are there. They represent really 1% of the population of Muslims in Europe.
Right. And
oh, I'm sorry, not 1%, 0.01%.
Yeah. So, and then you have the Republicans over here currently playing on the fears of this. And, I mean, I think I may have said it before, and I'm not sure how much you agreed with me on this point, but we probably said it off and on. I probably said it to you off and on over the years, is that even if you go back to 9/11, On that day, those terrorists got lucky to be able to pull off the horrible thing that they did.
Yeah.
It's the same thing here. Do you know, I keep saying to people, you're letting them play you and make you scared, but the likelihood of a terrorist coming over here and pulling off a major attack, you got a better chance of hitting the lottery.
Well, and here's the
it can happen, but it's that unlikely.
But I mean, here's the thing: if you have someone that's willing to kill themselves, let's be honest, there's not much you can do to stop them.
No,
because
you can't.
If they're that committed, most times self-preservation is what ruins these plans. So you've got people who don't care if they live. In fact, they want to die during these attacks. But as we see in France, there was three who blew themselves up on purpose, one who blew up accidentally. And then there was a raid today, and one person
It was a woman. It was a female that blew herself up.
Yeah, she blew herself up.
And,
but who are they taking out? Yeah. They took out one person in one of those bombs.
Yeah.
The others, they didn't hurt anyone in the bombing.
Right.
Or in the attack, the one in the theater, they shot the woman and her vest blew up, which is why other people got killed in that instance. But they blew themselves up and didn't have the mass casualties they were looking for.
No, they didn't. And I mean, 129 casualties is bad.
No, yeah,
period.
But those are mainly from gunfire.
So even one is bad. But yeah, and it was
shooting. But that's what I'm just saying. As far as these suicide bombers, they they didn't actually take out a lot of people with those suicide bombs. It was the shooting, you know, the weapon and stuff that took them out. But my point is, okay, if you're committed to doing that, it's going to be very hard. But at the same time, as we see, it's not easy for people to get access to that stuff in the Western countries. And they, I'm sure, have foiled way more plots than we are even aware of where they stop this stuff cold.
Because, I mean, think about it. And it said, and this was one of the things that I agree with that came out of the Bush administration, is that they only have to be right once. We have to be right every time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you had these people, like over here, they're talking about, oh, yeah, don't bring any of them, don't bring any of them. They'll all be terrorists, they'll all be terrorists, don't bring any of them. And you're sitting there and you're looking like, well, wait a minute. So I saw the emotion that everybody had when that little three-year-old boy washed up on shore from escaping. So you want to deny him because he's a terrorist?
Well, and guess who's running from the ISIS in those countries? There are other
those
Christians,
people.
Yazidis. Yeah. You know, there's so many different...
there are Muslims running
Shia,
from them.
The Shia Muslims are coming over, and that's because they only... ISIS subscribes to Sunni Islam, and that's it. Even if you're a Muslim, you're not a Sunni Muslim. And there's different sects of Islam as well, where they're not all just Sunni and Shia. There's many other sects there. So these are the people who are escaping and trying to get away from them. So, yes, we know that one of the bombers did come over recently. He came into Greece.
May have come over. I think I heard they changed that to may have come over recently. They're thinking that maybe that passport was dropped as a thing to do what we're doing right now, sitting there running scared and treating Muslims badly.
And he, I mean, he may have, but I honestly do think that some of the people coming over are from these terrorist cells. Again, small numbers, because we see that, and those numbers I was talking about before, those come from the European Union counterterrorism officials. So these aren't, again, things that are just being made up by the news agencies or whatever. These are based on their tracking these individuals from their home countries to Syria and back.
Mm-hmm.
So they have hard numbers that they can rely on, which, there's going to be people who slip under the radar. But the point is that there's a small percentage of people who are getting away with this, because guess what? No matter where you are in a Western country, unless you're taking a boat over there, you're going to be registered as leaving the country and coming back through some port. Some customs agent is going to see what you're doing.
Right.
And if they have a stolen passport, like you said, may have been the case with that one. And I did see that they thought the passport may have been stolen for that one guy.
It may have been falsified and just dropped because.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's like, what are you going to do?
Well, they had I'm sorry, go on.
I mean, like right now, what's happening now? Right now you have France going on a frantic bombing campaign, Russia going on a frantic bombing campaign, us on a bombing campaign. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to see troops on the ground from any of these countries going in there.
Well, but you know what? And I'm not saying this because I have any inside information, but I don't believe our bombing campaign has changed from before what we were already doing.
I don't believe ours has
either. Because
we're
doing stuff in support of the Iraqis over there. So we're working in concert with them, and that's what we're doing. We're supporting them to take their country back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about now you have France and Russia joining in.
Yeah, because they admitted that their plane was blown up by ISIS.
Right. But the thing is, what does it gain you to put ground troops in the Middle East? I don't understand. It's like one of these things where, okay, now they've completely avoided the so-called self-proclaimed capital of this quote-unquote caliphate because of human shields. Look, man, I'm sorry. I don't want to see any innocent die. But if you're going to actually declare this a war, you either go in there and root these SOBs out.
Well, this is my,
or you don't.
This is just my opinion based on what I've seen.
Right.
The one spoiling factor in this is Assad and his regime. Because without him there, there'd be political room for all the other countries and Russia to go in and clean house. As long as he's there spoiling the fight by trying to, you know, I don't know what he's trying to recover from his country, because he's...
I think he's just trying to stay alive.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, what they normally do, they run away to some other country and take the money and you never hear from him much again. But, I mean, he's not going to get his country back, but he has prolonged this because of the...
Yeah.
You're dealing with a nation state now.
Right.
So you have to do that, but we can't go in there and be seen supporting Assad.
Right.
The Russians are working with him, but obviously not effectively because he's not an effective leader. So,
nope.
But they still have to respect his territory as much as Russians respect anything.
Right.
In those environments. But, that's the main thing. Like, if he was not out of the equation, if they had won and taken out Assad, then it'd be open season. Until then, I think America's doing the right thing. We can support Iraq and their goals, but it's not our fight to get involved with ISIS, no matter how much they want to drag us in. But I think that they have overstepped their bounds now, and they're overreaching. They're starting to believe their own propaganda.
But, and if they sniff their, and if they sniff their butt high enough and actually do pull off an attack here, they better wait till they get a Republican in office.
Oh, but I mean,
they better wait till after the election to sniff their butt, because I think if they try it here while Obama is still president, there ain't gonna be none of that BSing that went on with Afghanistan and Iraq. Yeah. He's just going in.
Yeah.
He's just flat sending them in, and it's over for
it'll
you.
It'll be done. And I mean, in some respects, that's what everyone has wanted. But I understand, as we were mentioning, the reasons why he's had to hold back. But they would be dumb beyond belief to stage an attack like that in America again, because that is the one thing that gets us together, when at this point, most Americans still could care less. They don't know. You know, I was doing I was at the school doing career day and talking about my job and everything. But I asked them, you know, what's America's longest war? And they're like, Vietnam, World War II. I was like, you know, we're currently at war. They're like, what?
Yeah.
And they had no clue that
we don't treat it like it's a war.
Before they were born in some cases, you know.
Yeah, it's not been treated like a war.
No, because there hasn't been that involvement of most Americans. I see it from my end because I'm in the military environment all the time.
Right.
But it takes those moments when America gets attacked for people to come together and wake up and they realize. And then what happens with Americans? You bloody our nose. We want you gone. And we have the capability to do that.
To make you vanish.
Yeah.
That's like everybody says how Clinton was this and Clinton was that. I don't straight up remember. I don't think I remember Clinton actually saying, if you come over here, you attacking over there, okay, we're going to come get you.
Yeah.
You attack over here, you're gone.
Yeah, I mean, he was quick with the cruise missiles for other stuff, if they would mess up. Now, attacking France is one thing, because they have a capable military, but it's not large enough to do the things they want as far as power projection.
It can't project power all
right,
like that.
But America's all about power projecting, because that's all we've been doing.
Yeah,
we have been fighting limited. Like, people forget that everything they've seen over there has been in a limited fashion. And those numbers of troops and, you know, material that we've sent over there is not our full weight. That we haven't fought a full out war. Really, I mean, even Iraq war was not a full out war.
I think Korea was the closest we got to going full out the last
Well,
time.
I would say, you know, like Desert Storm, but we brought a lot of elements in, but that was a full court press. Like most of the people I know who were in the military, because I joined during that time. They were involved in that in some way, you know. It was huge. The second one with Iraq, some people felt it, some people didn't. I was down there 5 days after the war started, the second Iraq war. And, you know, when I left, people just doing the things they do. And I'm talking about the military people, you know. There were some over there, and they got extended for a long time. But a few of us went out to beef up what was already there. The home station was still going full bore with all the things that they already do. So people haven't seen us.
Their perception of America is not being able to fight or unwilling to fight. You're wrong.
Yeah, but that's what...
Because we can still do
it. Yeah, and they believe that, and I think they'll be... I hope they don't do anything to wake the beast, but...
Yeah, because I don't... Let me see. Before the second Gulf War, when we went into Afghanistan, we went in with what? 20,000 troops and a limited amount of air power. And we basically ran that government out of there. Not that there was much of a government there, but we ran that government out of there within a week or two. Then we turn around and we go into Iraq with... What, it was 120,000, 130,000 troops? Where the first time we went in on a major buildup, and we had 500,000 troops, and it still wasn't half of our military or whatever we had. And we went in there and completely wiped the floor with them both times, but because we didn't go in with a full military or with everything on point to concentrate on that, we just went in, laid waste of stuff, and they just rolled in behind us and did whatever they wanted to do and set us up for a long occupation.
And here's the thing, like the second Iraq war went the way it did because we couldn't get a coalition together because no one saw a point in joining the fight. So you had the British, you know, we always can rely on them. A few others, but it wasn't a big coalition. Guess what? ISIS, everyone hates them. Everyone wants
even the Russians.
Everyone had they give everyone a reason. Yeah, even Russia,
who hates our guts.
So
currently,
Russia is over there bombing them now on one side. So you got the other thing that well, if there's going to be a fight, who's going to be seen as the leader? Russia, the United States? Is it going to be a UN thing? I think it'd be a UN mission.
Yeah, it would almost
or a
have
NATO
to be.
Mission, and you know. It's going to be another coalition going to clean up house, and they don't stand a chance because, you know, they've been fighting against people who have capability, but not anything compared to what the major powers can bring to bear. I'll just say it that way.
Right. And if you think about it, I've read somewhere else today where ISIS and their quote-unquote powerful caliphate, they're talking about they can only field 15 to 20,000 troops. What is that? Is that a division for us? I mean,
and
we can send the 82nd Airborne over there and take out their
army.
And
let's be honest, most of them are fighting like the, you know, Russians and Stalingrad. Just like here, you got sandals on and flip flops, and here's an AK. Go to the front, and hopefully you'll be back tonight for dinner.
Right. Whereas you have us coming in with a highly trained and dedicated force.
Yep.
If we went in like that, which we aren't going to do unless they really pull some shit.
Right. Which,
pardon my French.
I mean, that's the way it should be. You know, we should not be doing ground combat in those places without it being a direct threat to the United States.
Right. And who said it? Chris Matthews said it. It's like, why are we going into Syria? What's the point in us going in Syria? Why are we going in Syria? Aren't there men over in Syria? Aren't there men who are willing to turn around and fight for their country? Let them fight for their country. Why are we? Why do we have to?
And that's why I think, if anything, we did, we should have never got involved in serious stuff. You know, again, Iraq, we messed that up. We have a responsibility to help right that shit.
Right.
But Syria, yeah, that's not our concern. If well, you all care, the European nations were worried about it, then go do something about it.
Well, that's don't true. Call us. But I'm almost thinking, though, if we hadn't done the things we did, the whole Middle East wouldn't be as destabilized as it is right now.
Guess what? If you can call it stable, I just think at some point in the Middle East, the dominoes need to fall and things have to get much worse before it can get better.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'm just tired. I just don't want more of anybody. I don't want anybody else to have to die for this madness. I really don't want any more of our guys to have to die for this madness.
No. We lost too many over there that didn't need to go.
Right. And it's like I said, and that's with any of these attacks. And I still say to this day, the only reason we're over there is for oil.
And I don't believe that, but I see it from a different perspective from you. But I can say with certainty it's not just oil. I'm sure at some point, you know, resources are an issue, but that's not what it's all about.
I don't think it's the only reason we're over there, but I mean, you always hear people talking about, we're there because of the atrocities and we don't want to do this and they're doing this to their people and this, that, and the other. Man, there have been atrocities all through Africa. Well, we ain't went over there. There have been atrocities all through the Far East. We ain't been in over there.
I would just say, put it this way, if it was about oil, we would have that oil now.
Well, it's not about oil. I don't think it's about oil for the country. I think there's a lot of corporate interest in all of that.
Oh yeah, but
and I mean, I could be wrong.
A lot of
but,
that corporate interest is there in the Middle East because all this stuff that's been going on, who has been silent?
The corporations.
Not the corporations. Those Middle Eastern countries that own the oil, they have not got involved.
Saudi Arabia hasn't done well.
They
no.
sent some fighters to Africa.
Isn't Saudi involved in some type of little proxy war?
Yeah, with Iran.
Over on the peninsula?
Well, with Iran, and it's over that same area, like Syria and everything. They're supporting opposite sides in that fight over there, and that's how they're hashing out their differences. But, I mean, there's a lot of Middle Eastern countries over there with a lot of money, and it's in their backyard, and they have done nothing. They keep letting the West think that it's their issue, their problem. But if things fall apart, ISIS is not going to stop with Syria and Iraq. So that's why I'm saying at some points it would have been better for everyone to pull back and let things fall apart a bit, because you can see that they would have been forced to do something for once instead of us wasting our money, our lives, when they are just sitting back and waiting for us to fix the mess so they can continue to have a revenue stream that's never broken. But no one wants to talk about that and approach that. And that's the real issue. It's their country.
Right.
Turkey didn't get involved until recently. And they're right.
Turkey didn't get involved until they got close to their border.
Right. But then who do they go after? The Kurds. They're still not attacking ISIS.
No, they're not.
So.
Because ISIS is screwing with the Kurds, who I guess is Turkey's enemy.
Like, why haven't those countries come together to help them create a Palestine?
Yeah.
You know, I think the Palestinian people deserve their own homeland. The Jewish people have their homeland. Why not carve someone out? They keep pushing into those areas. But, I mean, these are all issues that have huge ramifications. And, again, the people that are in those areas who would benefit from stability, they have done nothing.
Yeah, they don't do squat. They don't.
But we feel like it's our responsibility. Why? Because we have compassionate bent as a country. And the West, to a smaller degree, I think they have compassion but no action. America has compassion and action.
Yeah, and I think America has financial interest.
Well, yeah, if there was a financial interest, then we wouldn't get involved at all because...
Right. It's just not going to make somebody some money.
Right. But I would say that's the driver.
It's not the only.
I think it starts with the public. And then it's like, how do we get there
public,
from here? Because we need that money.
Right. I think for the public, it's compassion. For the people in power, it's about the money. That's just my feelings about people in power are always going to, or I'm always going to be cynical when it comes to that because of knowing the history of the country, just like you do.
Yeah, but again, I would still say it's power and not money that's a force for them. Because like the politicians want to stay in office. To stay in office, they need money. To get money, they need to make concessions with the business interest. The business interest says, I'll support your little war, but I better be getting something on the back end.
Right. Right. So it's the power to get, money.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, like I said, I hope they can find a way to make this work out where a whole bunch of soldiers and civilians don't have to lose their lives.
Yeah.
Because when it comes down and it breaks down to it, you can't fight an ideology.
Nope. And if I
and it's an ideology right now.
If I can go back one bit to what we were talking about with the refugees coming over and then like stupid states in America saying we're not going to take in refugees. There's an article in the Oregon, or is it Oregonian? Oregon Live.
It might be the Oregonian.
Oh, yeah, the Oregonian. Their website's Oregon Live. It was talking about the refugee hordes coming into America in 1938 and 1939. And one of the polls they asked in the Fortune magazine, what is your attitude towards allowing German, Austrian, and other political refugees to come into the United States? Okay, so 67.4% said, you know, with conditions, is there here? And then we'll try and get rid of them as soon as possible. But then they said, it has been proposed to bring to this country 10,000 refugee children from Germany, most of them Jewish, to be taken care of in American homes. Should the government permit these children to come in? 61% said no.
Yep.
And they had a boat that was on its way to the States, got as far as seeing the coastline of Florida before they turned them around and sent them back to Germany. And guess where those people wound up?
In concentration camps.
Children.
If they made it to the concentration camps and weren't killed on their way there.
Because they got turned away from Cuba and the United States and had to go back. So
we
have a long and troubled history with immigration in this country for everyone but the second peoples, I should say.
Well, everyone except certain class.
Yes.
Whoever the people were that were considered to actually be white at the time, and I know this is a weird, I know this is going to be an odd concept for people, but there are white people from Europe who weren't considered white by Americans.
Yeah. Oh, like the Irish at one point, the Italians at one
point. The Irish, the Italians, the Slovakian people.
They all had their time.
Yeah. They all had their time of catching hell. Never to the level of Native Americans and blacks. But they caught hell.
Yep.
And the Jewish people were the last set of white people who were treated like that.
So, well, I would say it's been a recurring thing with the Jewish at different points. I mean, they pretty much always had a hostility
yeah, they did.
Towards taking in Jewish people, but it peaked at certain periods. With the 30s, it was the Bolshevism because that was a story that Hitler told everyone and the Americans bought it.
Even though the Russians didn't like Jews.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I mean, I guess we could laugh about it in a hindsight, you know, with what we know now, but I guess they didn't have the internet and Facebook and stuff back then.
Right. I think we were laughing not at the situation that the Jewish people were in. We were laughing at the stupidity of the American people at the time.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go on to some of our lighter fare. We'll do science first.
Let's go.
Another article from Washington Post. How property rights in outer space may lead to a scramble to exploit the moon's resources. So I found this very interesting, Matt. Yesterday, the House of Representatives passed legislation known as Space Act of 2015. It's the U.S. Commercial Space Launch Competitiveness Act. So what this does is it recognizes and promotes the rights of U.S. companies to engage in exploration and extraction of space resources from asteroids and other celestial bodies, which includes the moon. So okay. In this article, they go on to summarize there's some startup companies that are privately funded commercial space companies that want to go to the moon to dig and try and find water because it's okay. such an expense to get water there, and they figure if they can find water on the moon, it can then be used as a launch bed for other things because you won't have to bring that resource up, which takes a lot of time or space on the vehicles and money in trying to right. get it there. So, well, what do you think about that? Or did you want me to go off?
No. I can jump in okay. now. Because when most people think about water, most people don't think weight with water.
Right.
Water is extraordinarily heavy. And every ounce of weight you put into a rocket or an airplane costs fuel. If you're costing fuel, in order to get up there, you have to have the smallest payload possible just to get into orbit.
And what can't you live
without? Because
of
technology. And if you're going to send people out there, people can't live without water. And the only way to get water up there is to blast it up there. So if they could find water on, say, a Mars, or in this case, the moon that we're talking about, it would mean that you could send a minimal supply of water with the people you're sending up there and get the rest of your water once you get there.
Okay, they're it. And, oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
What I was going to say next is, knowing the greed of the general private corporation, I don't know how. It probably wouldn't be in our lifetimes that we would see this. Maybe it will. Maybe more than likely it won't. But considering the greed of the private-public corporation, I don't think I want them going up there to do diddly squat.
Well, I could see a private company going to the moon in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the purely, yeah, we made it type of way. You know,
okay, that way I can see, but to go up there to be mining and doing stuff like that, yeah, I don't see
no.
that.
But here's the thing, there's this treaty called the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, which we signed,
uh-huh.
and it says that no celestial body is subject to national appropriation by claim of sovereignty, by means of use or occupation, or by any other means. So in other words, nobody can make a claim for territory on the moon.
Like
no nation state can own the moon or anything on it.
Okay.
So how they worded this act is that a private citizen could go there and then basically be compensated for any exploration or exploitation they make of the celestial body.
Right.
So it's a fine line because then the U.S. could say, well, we didn't do anything. That was just one of our citizens that went up there making
right.
a quick buck. And I think that's a slippery slope because what if China decides to go up there and do the same thing? We've already opened the door.
Right. Well, and then on top of that, you got to remember there aren't that many private corporations in China. I mean, the military kind of like has its own economic fiefdom going over there, if I remember
it
right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, everything is going back to the state.
Right, and also, a treaty can change. Let them find something valuable. I mean, well, let's think about it like this. If you, and I've listened, I know you're not a big fan of Neil deGrasse Tyson,
nope.
but, I remember listening to him on his show talk about this very subject, space mining or asteroid mining.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if we found the right asteroid or asteroids up there with the minerals, and we know the minerals are up there because what's in the asteroids is the same stuff that's in this planet.
Yeah.
You'd basically make stuff worthless overnight. So if you went up there and, say, found a platinum asteroid, a gold asteroid, and a copper asteroid, you were able to get them into orbit or able to mine them or able to and transport them back to Earth cheaply.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, none of that's worth anything.
Well, because, I mean, think about it. If you could...
Or even uranium.
But if you could...
Or stuff like
if
that.
If you can get up there and actually get the stuff out of the ground, I think you could get it back cheaply, just a simple model. You just aim it towards the Earth and blast it.
Yeah, you
and
got,
recover
you,
it once it enters the atmosphere, you know? I mean,
right.
It's going to be a little more complex.
Or you park
than
it, or you park it in orbit.
Yeah, yeah.
You park it in orbit.
And then capture it that way. There's the thing that I believe is good about this is that usually it's through private ventures that these new leaps are realized, because that you have the economic incentive, which is going to make people get involved because they want some return on investment, and they're going to make sure that that's maybe done in a more safe or
I don't know,
that's not the right word, but I'm trying to say they're going to make sure that they're going to get a return on their investment. So they're going to really put time and thought into how they're going to get up there, what they're going to do when they get there, and then pull out their return some way. So
Well, and I think, and I don't disagree with you necessarily. I just think this comes with our different degrees of life experience. Whereas you've had more of a military thing, I've only ever dealt with private corporations as far as my working life goes. And in my working life, what I found is there's a corporation will not buy you a screwdriver you need if they think this piece of junk screwdriver that they've had for 20 years will still work. So as far as them doing it safely, they only do it safely if it's forced upon them by the government.
Well, I don't mean in that sense.
So,
when
I'm thinking along those lines, and I'm trying to remember.
When
my
I say safely,
I
mean in that they're not going to want to lose their investment because the vehicle they send up there is substandard and it blows up. So I think in that sense, compared to the government building something, it's going to be better than the government.
Okay, now that I'll agree with you.
That's what
on.
I was trying to get. I just didn't word it right.
Right. Well, also think about it like this. When you also private companies don't really necessarily innovate either.
No.
Let's think about video games. Video games were invented in America. Who perfected and made video games what they are today?
Japan.
Well, in America. color TV. Fuel efficient cars. The list goes on of all these things made and invented in America that were done here, and the people running the corporations went, nobody's going to want that. Give it to the Japanese. Maybe this year would be the would be the Vietnamese.
I would disagree with that in a sense that the companies that are most able to take advantage of this right now are the American companies. You know, like SpaceX, they've already launched.
What about Virgin?
Yeah.
That's not an American company.
Well, no, but SpaceX has been more successful than Virgin. They've actually sent missions up to the ISS and stuff, and they're a little closer. They campaign to be able to compete honestly or fairly for rockets for government agencies instead of them using Russian rockets and things like that. So I think that they're there because these aren't just the pure capitalist, I believe, comes later in ventures like this. The people who are involved at the beginning – they have that bent for space, and they're more tech slash venture capitalists, or they're going to have venture capitalists to help the tech person realize their dreams because they are able to see the profit in it at the back end. So I think what you're describing is usually more down the road, but at the forefront, you know, it's going to have to be people who not only understand the business and economic side, but they're going to have to understand space, and there's even, I would say, going to be some benefit to everyone in the form of research and stuff like that. They're going to have to sell it way to get backing.
Well, yeah, and okay, maybe you're looking at step one, and maybe I'm looking at step 20.
I see what you mean. What's
there?
The aliens, the company and aliens.
Weyland-Yutani.
I see that too. Down the road, you know, there's going to be Weyland-Yutani, but I think at the initial steps, if we're going to truly get farther out in the space and where we've been so far, this could be an important first step.
Yeah, and look, trust me, you know me, I am a space fanatic, have been since I sat in the original Star Wars movie back in 1977 as a 5-year-old, fascinated by it. I just want it to be something that, I know neither one of us actually believe in reincarnation, but if there is a if, and I could get to come back, I would want to come back in a time where, you know, maybe space, and if I could hold any memory,
right,
maybe where space flight is no big deal. Maybe the Starship Enterprise is flying around
right
out there. You know what I mean? Because it's so, space is so vast.
Yeah.
Space is so, unexplored, the unknown. It's like, wow, can we do this?
And I think we will.
Can we even go out there?
I believe that if it wasn't for the halt after the end of the Cold War, you know, it's like, oh,
we bested our challenger.
Yep. And this was bankrupting us, which it really wasn't, because our space budget is still crazily small compared to how much could be put in that field. But, you know, when they put the brakes on NASA and all of that, innovation slowed down out of necessity because they didn't have the funds to do that.
Right.
So, but when you invest or you have a private venture doing these things, I think that a second space race could work to make
I think a second space race is inevitable, because you got to think, originally it was just the United States and the Soviet Union.
Right.
Now Japan, China, Brazil,
even the UK,
Russia's still there. UK, France, everybody is trying to get people up there now.
Yep.
I mean, what? Didn't Iran launch a dog or a monkey several years ago in space? I mean, so now you have all of these places trying to play catch up to a place where Russia and the United States have already been.
Yep.
And gave up because we were the only two doing it, and once the USSR went away, there was no point in the United States doing it anymore.
Right. Well, and the best part is that if there's anything that bears fruit from this act, it wouldn't be at the taxpayers' dime. It would be paid
for. Well, it still would be on a taxpayer dime, because the thing that I've learned about private corporations
they bring
is
your subsidies.
Exactly, and very rarely does any of their money go up
to
diddly
a point
squat.
There.
So we're still going to pay for it, regardless. So, like I said, if it's going to happen, I would like to see some of this stuff happen. And interestingly enough, there's a new propulsion system that NASA's talking about, and I can't remember
the exact name of it. Was it the Dragon capsule? I think we talked about that a while ago.
Well, yeah, they found something else that says it can work. And I don't know if it's a Dragon capsule, but it's some type of, it's not ion propulsion, which is they already have. It's something else. And, oh, God, I can't remember what it is. I really can't remember what it is, but I know I put it in Facebook on my comics and sci-fi page. And I can't remember what the heck it is now. And if hopefully it's not too far in that I can just find it real quick.
I was trying to see. I'm on their laboratory site, but I don't see it there.
Yeah, it was. Oh, dang it! I just had it, and the dang thing jumped on me. Come on, where did you go? Okay, it's at the EM drive.
Oh, okay.
It's an EM drive. They're saying the EM drive actually really works. So it's some type of electromagnetic thruster.
Oh, thruster okay. Jet. Yeah, I see it now. Okay.
Yeah. So they're talking about that. So we're getting closer and closer. I don't know how close we are to actually warping or bending space to come up with an actual quote unquote warp drive. but there are small steps being made that look like they're getting closer to that direction. Technology.
Yeah, and I think it'll happen. Again, it may not happen in our lifetime, but it's
right.
The space program has definitely been revitalized compared to where it was. You know, I would even say 10 years ago, there's been a resurgence
right.
in that. And I think a big part of it is because these private investors have gotten involved and it's kind of goaded the country on. Because let's face it, the government would want to have more say over what happens, even if they can't officially be involved. But that brain sharing between those people at that level is going to occur regardless because, you know, they're going to be friends and
right.
just – there's always that battle between the pure science and then the economics of that.
Right. And right now the economics aren't feasible for yeah. it, but who's to say 20 years from now
right.
it's not. And I would, like I said, I would love to see the warp drive or at least the very first hint of getting
right.
there before I leave this earth. But yeah, that would be cool, man. I love science. I love technology. There are times I wish I had taken my black ass to college to be a scientist. But you know, hey, we make our choices.
Yep.
So, you know.
Well, you know what, Matt? You can on Steam. They have this yeah. game. It's called Buzz Aldrin Space Program Manager or something.
Yeah, I'm too busy getting ready to play Ultimate Demo. I finally broke down and bought it. I haven't tried it yet.
It's great. I'm glad that the union didn't have to rely on me to win the war. It's usually taken me a couple times to win some of those battles, but
yeah. Oh, isn't it amazing? You get to go, hey, wait, I did this wrong, and you didn't have to kill anybody to do it.
I want to figure out. It'd be better for me if they let me control the whole thing from the very beginning and not like start you in the middle of a battle. That's always a bad way to go.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, I'm better when I get the
yeah,
setup
you know,
too. I wish they remake Modem Wars in a modern
man,
way.
That would be,
you know.
Yes, I saw they had the Tecmo Bowl on sale on the PS4, the old remastered whatever.
Really?
Yeah, it was like $6 on the eShop there,
see.
But
I couldn't even bring myself to play that because I'd be mad playing it because I'd be like, this is disgusting. This isn't even close to football.
I was just thinking of you. I know that used to be your game back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I did play, but that was
I
all
know,
I had.
Exactly. But that's all I had as far as myself. So I know you said you had a couple entertainment things.
Yeah, I got a couple entertainment things. Now, first, for those who are in the anime, there's a new Gundam series running on Hulu and Crunchyroll and in a few other places. They've actually brought it over here subtitled early, faster than what they usually do with anime. It's called, Mobile Suit Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans. And for those fans who are familiar with Gundam, there have been God knows how many Gundam series and movies and shorts. Or whatever, there's a couple dozen of them at least. This one, it plays on the same thing with the young person as the pilot of the Gundam, but the way they play it is, this Gundam isn't the tip top of technology. This Gundam is actually ancient. This Gundam is 300 years old. This pilot is a child soldier, and not child soldier in the way we think of Gundam pilots. Child soldier in the way he don't care, and he will put a bullet in the back of your skull, kind of child soldier.
Wow.
And it's building. It's only like 7 episodes in so far. It's outstanding. And the thing that they said about this series is, and it's crazy that they said it, because in the write-up, they claimed that this Gundam would be weak in the beginning. If this Gundam is weak in the beginning, I'm going to hate to see what it acts like by the end of the series. Because, dang, man, it's crazy.
Oh, I'm going to have to check that out.
How they do. Yeah, man, look. It's on Hulu. Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans. Dude, look, check it out. I think you will like it. Because aside from Wing, which is the first one they officially brought over to America, and the more military-themed Gundams that I saw in the past, this is currently running as my favorite Gundam.
Okay, that is high praise.
And Stardust Memory is my absolute favorite Gundam, 0083. Yeah. So this is turning out to be a very good series for me. For the Macross heads, the newest Macross series is supposed to premiere December 31st in Japan.
Oh.
I don't know about it coming
okay.
over here, but I'm going to be online hunting it early next year because I like Macross. Macross or Robotech in America, the first Robotech War, is what got me into anime and got me searching for anime. There's that. Dragon Ball Super, which for the people who were into Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super is a more direct sequel than Dragon Ball GT was.
Oh, okay.
Essentially, they've set up Dragon Ball GT as this alternate Earth, pay it no attention, we don't care, it doesn't exist. So Super is set a year or two after the end of Dragon Ball Z. And the movies Battle of the Gods and Resurrection of Frieza are the first two elongated story arcs. So if you've seen those two movies, the series is longer versions of those movies with other stuff added in. And they're adding in other characters and storylines in between to set up stuff for even later, further, for either even deeper in the series.
Oh, cool.
Right now, they're into the Resurrection of Frieza part of the series. It's not even 20 episodes in. And they've already resurrected Frieza. They didn't even do the, we're going to wait 20 episodes before he's actually resurrected. Nah, they resurrected him in two. But during the build-up to the resurrection of Frieza in the series, they introduced two new characters who are like the two characters that they introduced in Battle of the Gods. So they're doing
cool
stuff. And I'm interested to see where they go with it. Now to get on to Flash and Arrow. Flash has been good, but it hasn't been as strong. The beginning of this season hasn't been as strong as the end of last season. And the reason I'm saying that is because it seems like they're doing all of the setup for the next series in this universe in The Flash. And they're not putting a lot of it in Arrow. And they are like setting up the series Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
And in Legends of Tomorrow, they're going to introduce Hawkman and Hawkgirl and a few other characters where they're going to be some type of time traveling. They're going to be a time traveling superhero team, but they're going to mix villains.
Okay.
So all the setup is going on in Flash. So they're playing a lot of stuff to set this up in The Flash, which is, I think, is hurting the show. It's not killing it, but it's hurting it. So I'm waiting for the point where it gets back to being, hey, this is the Flash show, we're doing Flash-like stuff, and they did that with one episode, was introducing Zoom or something like that, where the hero got his behind some fiercely If you didn't see it, Jamie, all I got to say is go on Hulu and watch. Just watch it. You'll be like, ow, that's ow, ow, stop, ow. My mother didn't beat my behind this bad when I deserved it. Ow. They really got down like
cool.
that. As far as Arrow goes, Arrow looks like it's refound its legs from the previous season. Because the previous season, it got to a point where I just didn't
right.
care. I was like, okay, this is not good. This is not improving. This isn't getting better. I'll still watch it. I like it. But I don't care.
Yeah, I've.
But this season so far, it's running pretty good. They're doing good stuff with it.
Yeah, I've been off. I haven't seen much TV recently because there's been too many good games out. When I get some free time, I've been playing from game to game, and it's very interesting. So I'm way behind on pretty much all my shows, but I guess I got Fallout, and it's like, man, I know I'll be putting $200 in there eventually by the time I finish that.
See, and me, it's a first-person shooter. I won't be bothered.
Well, it's not really. You do shooting, but that's not the main. It's more RPG, like hardcore RPG. They improved the shooting in this one, but that's not the drive for the game. It's the story and the stuff that goes on.
And that's the other thing. I don't do RPGs.
Yeah, if you don't, then you would not like this. It's pretty hardcore. I mean, they dump you out into his world, and it's like, okay, have fun. You figure out what you need to do next. But I finished Metal Gear 5.
Okay.
That was excellent. It was.
I never finished 4. I think I'm like in the next to last part of 4. And I'm back at Shadow Moses, and it's like,
it took me years to finish 4, but 5, I tell you, that is the best Metal Gear game I've ever played. And if they follow up this one the way that, make it in the same vein as this one, and they make another one, which is doubtful.
Right.
I don't know, with Kojima gone now, but, yes, it's definitely the best. It's finally the Metal Gear I wanted to play where you can play it your way. In almost every mission in that game, it's got a more deep system.
Okay.
It's fun. The story is still crazy, but it's not always in your face either. So.
Okay. So it's not always the deep-seated 15 layers of political.
Oh, dude, there's hardly any cutscenes
background.
In this game. Most of
what?
The story is told through audio tapes you find in the world.
Okay, so he decided to.
Yeah,
okay.
It's
because I didn't mind the cutscenes because they were usually so good.
Yeah,
the cutscenes were usually so good, but it was the whole like the deep political stuff that they put into it that
that's all here
that mirrored
yeah,
today.
It's all in there, but you
like
can ignore
that.
It because it's a tape. You don't have to play it. Or with the cutscenes, they're way shorter. Like there's no hour long cutscenes in this. Longest cutscene I had is probably like maybe 15 minutes.
Okay, well, there was an hour. Which one had an hour long cutscene?
Mind.
I don't remember
never
hour
mind.
Long
you haven't
cutscene
finished
in any
four.
Of them.
Don't. I didn't say that.
Oh, I'm not watching the hour long cutscene.
I missed so much stuff before because I was literally falling asleep through the cutscenes. They were so long. But
the last cutscene I saw was when he met.
Yeah,
mom.
They don't have that.
Anyway,
put it this way, I would play Metal Gear. Solid 5, like, I've only got about 15 minutes. Let me just jump in here and I'll just go take over some bases or I'll just go try and find some stuff or, you know. I've never had a Metal Gear game. We could just get in, jump in, and jump out real quick when you got some free time.
Yeah, no, it's almost, no, I've never played a Metal Gear game like that, even the first one on the NES.
So that, and then I did Halo, which was really quick. It was quicker than I wish, but I'm glad it was brief, but I think they shortchanged me on that compared to the other Halo stories.
See, and I've never played a Halo.
If you don't like first-person shooters, you definitely won't like Halo.
Okay. But then there's, I did get to play a couple of games. A friend of mine brought over a few games because he came over to watch the Steeler game with me, and we played, He brought me Metal Gear, not Metal Gear. I didn't put Tomb Raider in. He brought what is it? Drake's Fortune. Uncharted Drake 3. He brought an Uncharted 3
over. I need
to
finish that.
And I'm like, okay, that's okay. But I'm sitting there like, do I have the attention span or the time to get that deep into that right now? He bought Grand Theft Auto 5 over the PS3 version, which actually looks pretty good.
Yeah, it was good. I had it originally on the 360.
I would really like it for my PS4. But I'm sitting there thinking, if I can get it cheap for the PS3 and there's not much of a difference but a little bit of graphics.
Dude, I say get it on the PS4. It'll be cheaper soon. It'll be down to like $20. Actually,
because they're still pushing it for $60 everywhere I've gone.
No, I've seen it for $40 all the time. Plus, come next month,
really?
Or actually probably next week to next month, you'll see it drop even more. Or I've seen it for $40 or less routinely, usually on Amazon.
Okay. Well, I'll check it out. Was that? He brought a third game. Oh, Last of Us.
Oh yeah, I finished that.
And I didn't finish it, and I'm looking at it like, dang, man, this is cool, but this is one of those, I'm never gonna finish it because I just don't have the time to play like that.
I finished it, and I was kinda disappointed in the way it went in the end. I don't know, I kinda had a love-hate with that game.
Okay.
It looks gorgeous, but some of the controls, like the actual controls and movement and stuff like that.
Yeah, the fighting controls were kind of throwing me. And he was talking about how, and the thing that I wanted to see was, I couldn't see it because he brought it over on my system, was that they're they ended up in Pittsburgh for a minute, but then it turns into something else.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're like, it's Pittsburgh, but it's not really Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't like the way this story ended. But.
Right. And, like I said, that stuff right there is what's grabbed me. Oh, Gotham seems to be improving.
Oh, is it? It needed to. I didn't even finish the first season because I just tapped out.
It seems to be improving. Well, you know how people say that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got better? Yeah, I tapped out on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I'm still watching it and hating myself at the same time. It's like, I watch the episode and I'll be hating on it, and then they just do that one thing. It's like, man, did it to me again. I got to come back next week. But
it's almost like a soap opera.
The stuff that's in there, there's some big things that you have to put up with some bad stuff to get to it, and then you're like, oh, man, that just happened. But I still couldn't just, I think it's worth watching, but I would completely understand somebody that doesn't want to sit through that stuff to get to it, if that makes sense.
Because, I mean, they said it didn't get good in its first season until after Winter Soldier came out. And then it got good.
That is very true.
And then the whole second season, they turned around and they did stuff to set up Age of Ultron. Then, now this season, I don't know what the heck they're supposed
it's
to be setting
Inhumans
up.
I hear
there's a setup.
It's all about Inhumans.
This season, but I hear they're also going to do stuff to set up Civil War.
I haven't seen that. I mean, it so far it's stood on its own. It's not tied to any of the greater Marvel universe. But at the same time, it's still got characters I just literally cannot stand in there. And that there's just a few things in there that make it worth it, and characters that make it worth sticking it out. But it's one of those where it might take me a couple of weeks just to watch one episode because I'll get upset and just turn it off.
Right. I know what you mean.
And then I'll come back, and then, you know, in 15-minute chunks, I'm like, wow, that's much better because they get to that thing that carries me over to the next episode.
Right. Well, and then, you know, this weekend, Jessica Jones drops.
Friday, right? The 20th.
Friday.
Yeah, I think that's
Friday. The 9th, the 20th.
Can't wait.
Jessica Jones
Can't
drops.
Wait.
I think I have my weekend plans in now. I'm still kind of disappointed that Luke Cage wasn't the next series, but I'm really interested to see what they do with Jessica Jones. And from the trailers I've seen, it looks good.
Well,
I'll be
taking
good.
My son to a Smash tournament, so that's my weekend there in Philly.
Well, hey. Hopefully he'll win.
Well, you know, I got to be supportive. Even if I don't understand what's going on the screen.
Yeah, look, man, I've seen Smash happen on screen, and I'm like, what in God's name?
I've played lots of matches.
I'm going to have epilepsy.
I'm just like, oh, okay, yeah. The next match is like, so what is that again? What's that?
Yeah.
It took me forever to figure it out. Now I'm just like, okay, I figured it out. I'm still not good at it, and I'm done. Sorry.
Dude, I'm still trying to figure out Dead or Alive 5, because there's a free download for Dead or Alive 5, but you only get certain, like, they give you four characters to play with in the free version, and then they unlock other characters.
Yep.
And then I'm like, I'm not paying for this game. As much as I would like to pay for this game, I'm not paying for this
game. He's been begging me to get that. We had them all on the Xbox, because that was one of the launch fighter games.
They went exclusive to the... Yeah, they went exclusive to Xbox for a while. Because I had Dead or Alive when the PS2 came out. And I loved it. And then when the PS3 came out, it had gone to an exclusive Xbox title. So,
yeah, no, that's one of my favorites. But he's been after me to get the full version because they had them on sale. And I thought I bought the full thing for $5. No, it sounded like I bought what then became the free version.
I got jammed, so I was
pissed off, and that just kind of kept me from buying a full one. But they have it at GameStop for like $25 or something. Whatever.
Yeah, because I think they want 30 for the full
this
version.
This was for used.
No, they want 30 to get all the characters.
Well, because there's story mode,
and then they still want you to spend. Yeah, they still want you to spend money.
Yeah, it's
story
separate
mode.
From the single. Like, because he obviously wants to play the multiplayer. I like only the single player. So we would need to get the full thing, and I just said, I don't know if it's worth that, because they had a lot of janky stuff to it.
Yeah, nah, because they were like, oh, yeah, you can get this costume and that costume, and you could have the she's almost naked
That's
version.
What that game's
like,
really all about with the costume stuff, so I usually just got the base game.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm not going to lie. As a grown man that sometimes remembers his teenage years, you're going to put a woman that fights in a tight T-shirt and some bikini bottoms. I'm kind of there for that, but at the same time,
I'm too old for that.
I'm not paying for it either. I'm not paying for that right now. That's something you did get me with back when you still had bounce mode and things. And how long ago was that? I think it was.
Well,
they're
bringing that back because they're bringing back the volleyball version of that game or something, the Japanese version, with the new graphics and realistic bounce effects, I guess.
Okay, here's all I have to say on that subject. And there are very beautiful Japanese women who I guess are well endowed, but in the stereotype is. There's no boobs, there's no butt, and Japanese men have fascination with both.
The game are, American or German or whatever. Their nationalities are all over the place.
No, they have straight up Japanese women.
Oh yeah, I mean,
built like the two sisters on that game,
Kasumi.
Kasumi and Asami or whatever. They're just like, yes, boobs everywhere
Everything in the Japanese like that, like Metal Gear. That's one of the problems. I couldn't wait till I could get some clothes for Quiet because it's, I played a game. I got nothing but girls up there for the most part. And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because she's wearing nothing, and they try and explain something, but they just get weird with that stuff in Japan.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm not going to knock it. It's a different culture. I mean, I enjoy some of their culture. Like, I like anime. I like some of the games that come out of there. I've played most of the Metal Gears. So, I mean, like, yeah, I can't knock them at the same time. This is also the country that put out tentacle porn.
Yeah, but
anime.
I would just say, you're a grown man making a game for other grown men. Grow up.
Yeah, there is a point. Just grow up. Yeah, there is a point.
Like you said, the dinner last stuff like that. Okay, that's aimed for teens and everything. Not justifying it, but it's different than your audience for a Metal Gear game where you're talking about nukes and child soldiers and all this serious stuff, global politics.
Yeah.
No, let's look at the bouncy girl with no clothes on. It doesn't.
Well, you know, I mean, us, you and I as grown men who enjoy playing a game for the action and stealth aspects of it with the global politics and stuff, that game is made for us in a way, but it's still not made for us. It's made for the Gamergate jerk that's in his mama's basement.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's made for the guy that will get on a chat and call us every version of the N-word if we're playing like a first-person shooter.
I turn on voice chat first thing, and that's when play a multiplayer game.
I tend to not play multiplayer games. Closest I got was Star Trek Online, and I could still roll through that minding my own business and didn't have to chat with anyone.
But I think we should move it on now. We're past the 2-hour mark.
We've been going for a good while.
So we can wrap it on up. But do you have any last things to mention before we get out of here?
I hope the people that are listening to this get to enjoy it. I give us some feedback, please. We would like to get back on a weekly schedule, hopefully next year sometime.
Most likely.
And you know, we need the input so we can make the show better for you and ourselves.
Yep. So as usual, we said you could come check us out on our website, believethat.blackvalor.net. Please leave us email at believethatnews@gmail.com. You could also find us on Twitter and Facebook at Believe That News. And we will see you again probably the middle of next month, maybe a little before with the holidays, but there will definitely be a show around the middle of next month. So come look us up. And we'll see you later.
See you later.